Let's start again on the Vav Amud Beis. The end of the first wide line. You might as well start from the second wide line. Rabbi Zeira, right? So let's start again. This piece. Omar Rabbi Zeira. Igre de Pirke Roate. This Gemara, we already started seeing it the other day, is coming and giving interesting twists on different mitzvahs. Right, for example, the Gemara is going to tell us that the schar for learning Torah is actually something else. So let's see what the Gemara is going to tell us. What we're supposed to get out of it. Igre de Pirke Roate. The schar for going to a shir is in the running to the shir. So the Netziv explains, it gives a general perspective on this whole Gemara. The Gemara is coming to try to point out how many times a mitzvah comes along with side benefits. And note those side benefits, because if you note them, you can take advantage of them too. So, Igra de Pirkei Rata. Schar for going to a shir is running to the shir. And besides just the learning, or if you want to put it in Rashi's a little more harsh perspective, sometimes you don't even learn the shir at the level that can really count. Nevertheless, there's another whole dimension of schar in the very fact that you're running to a shir. That itself is a demonstration of honor for the Torah, and that itself is an end in and of itself. What? Just the attending. That will kind of be the next one. No, it means that the schar is for the running. There's schar for the running. Omar Abaye. No, Abaye adds, Igre de Kale Duchke. Also, the schar for getting together for a big drasha. There's schar in the fact that it's crowded. Meaning, again, whether you understood the shir and you did it or you didn't understand the shir, there's another very great benefit in the very fact that you are coming and contributing to a crowd, coming to hear a shir. That, once again, is a display of honor for the Torah. That's an end in and of itself, in addition to the schar for the learning. What's that? So that's why Rashi said, Rav Shlomo Zelig, it sounds like that's the whole schar. So, the way Rashi put it kind of was, oh, you really can get the schar for the learning? Will you remember it in a half a year? Can I test you on it? If not, then your schar is in the running. So that was Rashi, but the other Mepharshim don't make us resort to that. They say that no, the Gemara is coming to point out that there are added elements of schar. The way the Netziv puts it is mitzvah gereres mitzvah. A mitzvah often comes along with side benefits that are ends in and of themselves. Ah, we welcome the newest member of the ranks of the Army of Hashem. Mazel tov to Avram Yosef. We've already seen last week that we have a very promising new member here. A lot of nachas. Mazel tov to the boxers. That's right. Right. Omar Rove. Igre de Shmeitze Svara. The schar for learning Torah, this is already not a shir per se, the schar for learning Torah is the effort involved in figuring it out. This is the famous concept, that when it comes to Torah, the reward is not for the final result per se, but for the efforts put in to understanding. Therefore, if you break your head over something and at the end of the day feel that you did not come away with clarity, you have to realize that you had a successful learning seder. Omar Rav Pope, Igre de Beitamye Shtikuse. The schar of going to a house of mourning is the silence. This is the famous, based on the famous halacha, that you think you're there, it's your job to make sure to say the right thing to the mourner, to make sure that he feels better. No, sit there silently. In fact, that's the halacha. You're not supposed to say anything until he dresses you. But besides that, realize that just sitting there, showing your solidarity, is an end in and of itself. Now, the Netziv has an interesting twist here. According to his general approach to this sugya, that we're coming to show side benefits, listen to this. He says, one of the side benefits of going to a house of mourning is that you sit quietly for half an hour without saying anything. That's an achievement in and of itself. No dvarim betalim. Keeping quiet is an achievement. That's what the Netziv says. It's an approach. Okay? Omar Mazutra. Mazutra says, Igre de ta'anise tzidkese. That's right. Oh, Rav Shlomo saying that's the ma'aseh of the pshat in that very halacha. Your job is not to tell him anything. Often, once people do open their horse mouths, they attempting to console. They sometimes just complicate things. Sometimes it's a better idea to just sit, show your solidarity. Now, Omar Mazutra. Mazutra says, Igre de ta'anise tzidkese. The schar of a fast day is in the tzedakah that you give on the fast day. It's already mincha time. So at the end of the fast day, you're tired. And again, they come around annoying. You don't have the kayach now. You're exhausted. You're fasting. You have to realize that that's an important part of, an important element of the fasting. Giving the tzedakah. Now, in fact, the Meiri says that it's kind of testing whether your fast day achieved its purpose. That the purpose of the fast day is for you to come away a better person. By giving tzedakah, you're proving yourself. Omar Rav Sheshes says, Igre de hespeda diluya. The schar in giving a hesped is by arousing weeping. Meaning, the direct purpose of a hesped, of eulogizing, is kavod ha'meis, the dead person. That's an end in and of itself. But we add to that that there's another objective that you're achieving here. Hatzavein odom l'chaveiroi. By raising your voice, trying to get the crowd to weep, that also eases the suffering of the actual mourners.
I said, if you succeed, how may have just tried?
What's that?
If you succeed in making them cry with you, or trying to make them cry with you?
But Ruben is asking if it's only if you succeed or just the trying. Well, we'd say that that would fall under the regular category with all mitzvahs. That an effort to do a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Achieving the mitzvah is also a mitzvah. But the effort
learning
also gets
cut.
No, that's what learning Torah per se. Learning Torah is a... There specifically we say that the effort is the end. With other mitzvahs you don't necessarily say that. We just say that the effort also earns you schar. Known, by the way, the famous story of Chaim Shmulevitz. There was a young woman lost her husband. A young woman with a couple of small kids lost her husband, and she was terribly broken. Can't blame her. And many people came, and all kinds of chashev rabbanim came, and they were telling her all kinds of profound things and thoughts, and nothing was really having an effect. Chaim Shmulevitz came in, sat down, looked at her for a minute, and just burst into tears. He sat there for about 10 minutes just weeping. And then he got up and he left. And the woman afterwards said that that did the most, that went the furthest in actually bringing her a certain feeling of consolation. Someone else was with her in it. Now, Omer Rav Ashi says, Igre de behilule mili vischar. Of participating in a chasana, we're going to see later along in the Amud, that itself is a very, very sublime activity. The schar in participating in a chasana or in a simcha of a marriage, whether it's the sheva brachas or whatever it is the words that you say in honor of the chasan in kala. Now, this means to be misameach. Misameach the chasan in kala. Isn't the mitzvah when you give a speech by a sheva brachas to get up for 45 minutes and launch into all the thoughts you ever had, or to let everybody know what your Shalom Bayis problems are by getting up there and giving one etzah after the other to the chassan and kallah. But the point is, try to figure out what's your objective. Your objective when you're getting up to speak at a Sheva Brachas is not necessarily to teach them a profound lesson, to give them good guidance in life, and your wife might say the opposite, just she can't speak. The point is to be mesameach them. Figure out. Sometimes it's by praising the chassan and kallah. Sometimes it's by a good joke. That also, it's a mitzvah in and of itself. Again, as long as it doesn't enter the category of frivolousness. But in a serious way, sometimes to lighten the atmosphere with some good jokes, the chassan and kallah enjoy. That's ischar for participating in a simcha of a marriage. So really what the Gemara here is doing is giving us perspectives to note different elements of what you're doing in these different activities. Okay, we'll move on. Omar Avuna. Avuna says, Kol ha-mispalel acharei beis ha-kneses nikro rasha. Anybody who davens behind the shul is a rasha. That's a strong statement. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, soviv rishayim yisalotu. The rishayim circle from around. They don't come into the shul. They're around the shul. When a person davens outside the shul, he's a rasha. Why? Why is that? And the answer is, this doesn't necessarily mean, we'll see exactly what the parameters are, what the halachic parameters of this are. It doesn't necessarily mean a person who's outside the shul because there isn't enough room. It means a person who is showing his disregard for what the tzibur is doing. Either by standing with his back to the shul, that's really the problem here. Standing with his back to the shul. For a person to stand with his back to the shul is a sacrilege. Or by facing a different direction than the rest of the tzibur. When you face a different direction than the rest of the tzibur, then it's as though you're showing that you're davening to somebody else. So we'll see exactly what the parameters are and how we apply this practically. Whatever it is, this is the point that Avuna is putting down. That to stand demonstrating a disregard for what the tzibur is doing renders one a rasha. Now Omar Abaye, so therefore Abaye qualifies this and says, Loyamoron elo doloy mahader apele beknishte. That's only if you do not turn to face the shul. Meaning, like we said, you daven with your back turned to the shul. You're a little too good for the rest of the tzibur, right? You can't bother with all the small folks. You do your own thing. You stand with your back to the shul. Avol mahader apele beknishte. But if the person turns to face the shul, leislon ba. That is not a problem. If you're facing the shul, it's okay. What's that? If Stan is asking if that's still considered davening with a minion. If there is a minion in the shul, and you're standing right outside the shul, there are sufficient grounds to consider yourself as davening with a minion. Okay, now let's just understand what this means, because this is very important to halacha and can be relevant. So, let me give out one of these. Can't let too much time go by without a sheet. Maybe just pass this back. Oh, this is... Let's understand exactly what this means, because this is Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, and we have to understand, just in order to be alert, when it might be relevant. It won't be relevant often. There won't often be a problem with this, but you do have to be aware because it could be relevant. So, is there one more? I need one for myself too. Shkoyach. Okay. So let's look at a Rashi together. Rashi, on the left column, up on top, Achore Beis HaKnesses. Okay? And we'll see exactly how he describes what's going on here and what you have to look out for. So Rashi says, "Kol pischei beis hakneses hayu b'mizrach." Shul's door opened to the east. Now let's remember that in earlier times they davened towards Meirut. When people lived in Babel, they davened towards Meirut. So whenever we're thinking of it, we're going to have to convert it always to the opposite. Whatever it is, he says, the shul's door was on the east side, meaning in the back of the shul. The Halchi Tanya b'Tosefta de Megillah, as we learn in the Braisa of Masechta Megillah, Me'ein Mikdash u'Mishkan. Just like the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. The Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, when you were davening there, you were facing west. The Kodesh HaKadoshim was to the west side. You entered from the east and you faced west. V'achareim l'mizrach. And the Tzibur stands with their backs to the east. V'amispalel achareim Beis HaKnesses. Now a person who davens behind the shul, meaning he stands on the east side, meaning as follows. Look at the diagram, the left one. See, under Rashi. You have the door in the east side, it's down on the bottom. Everybody is facing west. Well, you know what? If we'll put it into our terms, the other way around. The door is in the west, you enter the door and you face Mizrach, okay? That's the arrow showing you where the Tzibur is facing. If you stand behind the shul, meaning you stand by the door without entering, and outside of the hallway, and let's continue in Rashi. We'll put one finger on the diagram, one finger in Rashi. And you do not face the shul, meaning, if we're talking about this shul, you stand outside the door and face out of the shul. You face away from the Beis Medrash. The picture here, we have an arrow facing away from the shul with an X on it. Towards the street. Yeah. No, towards the street. You stand right outside the door with your back to the Beis Medrash, facing that way. It looks as though you are denying the one who the Tzibur is davening to. That Tzibur is davening to there. You're davening to someone else over there. The hader avhune mukila labaye b'dolei mahader apele b'knishti. And now, avhune explains. Abaye will explain to avhune that this is referring to a case where he doesn't face the shul. So again, if we're talking about a shul like this, you're standing right outside and you're facing away from the Beis Medrash. So you're outside the shul and you're facing the opposite direction. And your back is turned toward the shul. Okay. So, if we look at the diagram for a minute, according to Rashi, the primary problem is in the fact that you're turning your back to the shul. You're disregarding what the tzibur is doing. So now let's look at Rashi. Look at the diagram. You have the shul, the tzibur is davening towards the mizrach. Now if you need to daven outside the shul for whatever reason, it can take a couple of forms. You can daven outside the door, your mamish behind the tzibur. Now, if you face toward the shul, like in the circle, you're okay. You're standing behind the shul, but you didn't turn your back on the shul, and you're davening in the same direction as everybody else. You're okay. But if you turn around and you daven away from the shul, that's no good. That's how Rashi presents it. Now Tosfos disagrees. According to Rashi, what's that? Tosfos is on the previous Amud. You have to turn back. Now, I'm not going to go through Tosfos, I'm just going to present it outside. See the little asterisk showing you that it's really shaykh to the next page. Tosfos says, according to Rashi, what would come out is that the problem is only when you're facing away from the shul and davening in the other direction. But what if you go in front of the shul? Okay? Beyond the mizrach. What if you're davening outside over there? And you turn around and face the shul? That will be okay. Even though you're davening in the opposite direction of everybody else. Right? Taisa says no. That's not what the Gemara is talking about. The Gemara is talking about the opposite. We're talking about a guy who's standing out there. The opposite of what Rashi explained. Afterwards, we're going to sum this up and put it into practical perspective. Right now, I just want to put down the two approaches. Taisa says that when we talk about davening behind the shul, you must face the shul. It means... Well, let's see. We're talking about a person who's standing out there. And now we say, the Isser is... And just one second, I just want to finish presenting it. The Isser is to daven in the opposite direction of the tzibur. And therefore, it's exactly the opposite. If you stand out there and you're facing away from the shul, you're okay. If you turn around and face the shul, you're davening the opposite direction of the tzibur. They're davening towards the east, you're davening towards the west. That's the problem. Tzitzis. Yeah. So now, so I'm sorry, you just were going to say something. Does it count as a shul? Not really, unless it's designated for davening. What? Daven where? Behind the shtibla. We'll get to that. And no, that unless it's designated for davening, it doesn't really count as davening in a shul. Better not to daven there. The opposite direction. Rabbi Nechanya is asking, we just introduced that there's a problem, at least according to Tosis, to be davening in the opposite direction of the tzibur. So how do we explain the front row, which faces the tzibur? So the answer is that the problem here is Shemana Esrei. Shemana Esrei is what we're calling tefillah in this sense. That's when this problem applies, not in other parts of davening. And yeah, even the people sitting up Mizrach and facing the congregation will never daven Shemana Esrei in that direction. What's that? Very good. Rabbi Yaakov is asking, according to Tosis, why is it called behind the shul? The main point is not whether you're behind the shul, the main point is whether you're facing the opposite direction. That's right. The Mefarshim comment that on Tosis. So Tosis seems more consistent. You know what? Let's see. Let's actually analyze, just for a minute, what are the implications of each of the two different opinions? Again, let's keep this clear. What? Jonathan is asking a very good question. Jonathan is asking, according to Tosis, the problem is to be facing the opposite direction. Meaning, if you're standing on that side of the shul and you're davening away from the shul, you're okay. You turn around and face the shul, you got a problem. Rabbeinu Yoina asks the question that Jonathan just asked. It says, regarding the Beis HaMikdash, everyone davened facing the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right? So it says that if a person is standing west of the Beis HaMikdash, behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, everyone in the Beis HaMikdash is facing this way. The person standing behind the Beis HaMikdash should turn around and also face the Kodesh HaKadosh. That seems to imply that Rashi is right. The main point is not to stand with your back to the shul. It doesn't matter if you're facing an opposite direction as long as, Lamaisa, you and the Tzibur are facing the same center point. You're both facing Aron Kodesh. That's okay. Even though it's two opposite directions, that doesn't matter. Because you're davening towards Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh is the central point. Oh, so you raised the point in favor of Rashi, you raised the point in favor of Tosis. Okay, that's a healthy balance. Fine. What's that? You raised the point for Rashi, right. And you raised the point to Tosis. Right. So Rashi is asking, isn't the main idea davening towards the Mikdash? It's interesting that comes out to be an element of the Machlokes here. Is the main point to be davening towards the Aron Kodesh, which should in a general way be facing towards the Makam HaMikdash? Or is the main point to be davening towards Eretz Yisrael? Right, so the truth is that, yes, the main point is to be davening to Eretz Yisrael, but yet, to have your back to the shul is always a problem. And therefore, not davening towards Eretz Yisrael is not a sacrilege. standing with your back to the shul is a sacrilege. And therefore it's better to turn around and face the shul, even though you're foregoing the advantage of davening toward Eretz Yisrael, than to stand with your back to the shul. So if we'll sum it up, what's that? No, that's Rashi. If we'll sum it up, just in order to keep it clear, then you can ready calculate the cheshbonos yourself. According to Rashi, the problem is to stand with your back to the shul, whichever side of the shul you're on. Always face the shul. According to Tosfos, what? Always face the aron, right. According to Tosfos, the problem is to daven in a different direction. The main point of machlokes between them will be, what should a person standing in front of the shul do? According to Tosfos, daven away from the shul. According to Rashi, you're a Rasha if you do that. You're turning your back to the shul. Rashi says, turn around and face the shul. Tosfos says, you're a Rasha if you do that. You're davening in the opposite direction. So what are we paskin? And then we'll just put it into perspectives in a few of the local shuls. What's that? Turn 90 degrees. Actually, the paskin addressed that possibility. We have to address that because we didn't discuss what happens if you're davening on one of the sides of the shul. We'll see. You're going to say something? No. It's inherently sacrilegious. Good. We'll get to that. I want to put that on hold. Good. You're raising a good point. That question was asked of the Rambam. I'll put your question into a better perspective. Everybody here is familiar with Masas Mordechai? If you daven in the Big Beis Medrash in Masas Mordechai, you have your back turned towards the Shtibla. You're davening with your back turned towards the shul. Okay, so 1 minute, I'm going to put that on hold. But first, let's just sum it up. So, if you want to be the Shulchan Aruch L'maisa Paskins, you must follow both opinions. Which basically means that there is no way to daven in front of a shul. You can never daven in front of a shul, because according to Rashi, you can't face away from the shul. According to Tosfos, you can't face the shul. So, halacha l'maisa, it is never mutter to daven in front of a shul, that way. To daven behind the shul, right, out there, and face the shul, that's okay according to everybody, right? According to Rashi, you're facing the shul. According to Tosfos, you're davening in the same direction. And to stand outside the shul and turn around, that's no good according to everybody. So really the main point just to keep in mind, it's never really going to be relevant that you have to be conscious of not standing over there and davening in the opposite direction. A person will never have reason to do that. But you may have situations where you're standing in front of a shul and then you have to realize that this issue does pertain. This won't be so relevant most of the time because in most shuls it's not just really not practical to be standing on that side. Here, for example, it's not really going to manifest. In most shuls it won't. But you have to keep in mind that it could. For example, many shuls open from the back, right? You come in from the back. What happens if you have a shul that you enter from the front? Who remembers Masas Mordechai before they moved? Remember when Masas Mordechai was in the parking lot? The door of the shul was in the front wall, the same wall as Aron Kodesh. Here this was very relevant, and people did mess up on it. Because when the shul is crowded, or you come late for mincha, and the door is kind of open, you stand right outside the shul and you daven, that is exactly what we're talking about here. You're standing in front of the shul. People would typically naturally stand in front of the shul facing Mizrach, with their backs to the shul. That is direct transgression, according to Rashi, which the Shulchan Aruch says you have to take into account. So this is something you have to keep in mind. It could be relevant. It could be relevant also in today's Matzos Mordechai. If you're davening, for whatever reason you might be davening, there is space in front of the shul, right outside the window where you can hear the chazan. A person might find himself in that situation. So that's very, very important to keep in mind. It's absolutely usur to daven in front of a shul, no matter which direction you're facing. To daven behind the shul is okay, and I don't think anybody would even... Naturally, nobody would turn around to face the opposite direction. What about?
I'm for that role and demand your own culture. Am I technically to the back?
No. If you're inside the shul, you're okay. If you're inside the shul, you're okay. The problem is when you're outside the shul. Someone started saying something?
You frequently find yourself in a situation where you're doing Kedusha and you're the front of the shul.
That would not... Jonathan is asking what happens if you get caught with Kedusha in front of the shul. The problem is Shemoneh Esrei. The problem is to daven Shemoneh Esrei. That is worship in the most pure sense of the word. You can't... And the problem is to be worshipping in such a situation. Now, another thing that's relevant to Masas Mordechai... What? That's what comes out. The Shulchan Aruch says, Toiv lachosh l'shneim. It's good. Oh, it paskins both. So you have to follow both opinions. That's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. Now, to daven alongside the shul, the place can say is fine if he's facing the same direction as the shul, obviously. That also could be relevant to Matzah Mordechai if you stand right outside the door in Matzah Mordechai, where the door is in the side of the shul. So again, generally when you're talking about a shul where the door is in the back, you're not usually going to have a problem. Talking about a shul where the door is in the front, you could have a problem. And when you're coming in from the side, you generally won't have a problem either, you just face the same direction as the shul. Now, we have to raise the point that you addressed before. What happens if you live in a house that's right in front of the shul? Here, could be relevant here. People living in the homes there, if they're going to daven towards Mizrach, they're davening with their back to the shul. Or, the more extreme case, maybe it's usher to daven in the big base medrash of Masas Mordechai, because your back is turned toward the two small bottom midrashim in the back. So the Rambam was asked this question, said that there was a shul which had, there were homes adjacent to the shul, east of the shul. People davening in those places had their back to the shul. So there was someone in the kehillah who called them a rishon. Our Gemara says, you daven with your back to the shul, you're a rasha. The Rambam says, absolutely not. It's only talking about an outside open area in front or in back of a shul. But if you're in a structure, if you're in a room, a closed room, that already, you're in the room, you're not in front of a shul. The question is how it's perceived to the eye. Not meaning that it's only an issue if people see you. But the question is, what is the what semblance does this area have? What? Yeah, but the reason I'm avoiding saying Maris Ayin is because then you might think that the issue is only if people see you. No, the point is, how does it appear inherently? When there's nothing around the shul, in fact, the Rambam takes it a step further. He says, like the Beis HaMikdash, which was clear all around, right? And Memela, the area around, was called being right outside the Beis HaMikdash. But when you have an apartment adjacent to a shul, you're not outside the shul. You're in a different apartment. And therefore, says that's certainly not a problem. And therefore, yes, it's okay to daven in Masas Mordechai in the Big Beis Medrash. And not only that, you can even daven in the lobby of Masas Mordechai, which is mamish in front of the Beis Medrash, and you have your back to the shul. That's fine. That's fine because you're in a different room. You're not outside the shul with your back to the shul. Shlaim is asking, how far does this go? I don't know, but I would guess that it's as long as you're directly exposed to the shul. Which is always going to be limited. I don't know. I don't know. I didn't see this address. What? Maybe? Maybe wait till you're the chazan, but you still wouldn't be able to daven outside the shul then.
It would go as far as people would say you're not outside the shul.
What? Jonathan, what you're suggesting is probably true, but hard to define. Right? Possibly. Right. Okay. So that's this issue. I'm sorry? Again? Right. Ah, if you're in the Rav's room in the Groshul. Oh, that's Mamish, another good example. Daven towards Mizrach. You got nothing to do with the shul anymore. You daven towards Mizrach. What? That's okay. Whether it's one, this separate rooms in one building is called separate. Okay. What if? That doesn't matter. The Paiskim Mamish talk about this case where there are azorais outside the shul. There are lobbies outside the shul. That's Mamish what the Paiskim talk about, and they say that that's not a problem based on the Rambam's tshuva. Okay. Now, we move on with a little incident that just highlights the importance of this. How gavre de komatzle achorei beknishta. Now, but I just want to preclude a mistake. If you're going to go look this up in Halacha, and you're going to learn in Shulchan Aruch that it says that if you're davening on the north or south side of the shul, you're davening on the side of the shul, you must turn your face towards the shul. That's going to confuse you because, 1 minute, so I shouldn't face Mizrach? So I just want, in case you're going to look it up, I just want to preclude a misunderstanding. No, if you're standing right on the side of the shul, you face Mizrach. Shulchan Aruch means that in case you cannot face Mizrach for whatever reason, let's say there's a garbage ahead of you, and it's a question of, you're standing on the north side, should you turn toward the shul this way? The tzibur is davening like this and you're going to daven like this. Or should you turn away from the shul, daven toward the shul? Never be with your back to the shul. But to stand alongside the shul facing the same direction as the shul, that's fine. Okay, now let's see. The Gemara closes this off with an incident. How gavra? There was a person, the komatz le'acharei beknishta, who was davening behind the shul, ve'loy mahade apele beknishta, and he did not turn to face the shul. Cholaf Eliyo. Eliyo passed by. Chazir. He saw him davening like that, back to the shul. Idme le'kitaya. So Eliyo appeared to him in the form of an Arab. Omarle. And he told him, meaning, he wanted to stress the point that what you're doing is so clearly sacrilegious, you don't have to be proficient in halacha to sense this. He appeared to him as an Arab and said, Kiduvar kindness kameh marach. You're standing before your God like there are two gods? Meaning, everybody's davening one way, you're davening the other way. Sholaf Sapsere, he pulled out his sword, Vikatle, and he killed him. Killed him. Oh, so Reuven is asking the obvious question. It's Chayiv Misa? Transgressed this halacha is Chayiv Misa? So, what's that? Let the man answer. Eliyahu knew the answer. He's Eliyahu Hanavi. So some of the Mefarshim seem to be bothered like this. There's a different reading in the Gemara that doesn't read Elio. It just says an Arab passed by and killed him. Arabs don't need you to be Chayiv Misa in order to kill. They're happy to do so unwarranted. It does.
Hashem allowed this to happen.
If a person is killed in a car accident, it doesn't indicate that he's Chayiv Misa. This happened because the Arab felt that it was wrong. The Arab judged him, sentenced him to death, and implemented the psak. We are coming to come away with a lesson of this, from this, that this is something that even an Arab sees as wrong. Or maybe his time came. Yeah. In general, the person is killed. He was killed, whatever the cheshbon might be. But the Ben Yishchai says, no, we don't have to... There's even a different shot that the Mepharshim give, which complicate in trying to resolve one problem, just complicate things even more the way the Ben Yishchai says it. They say, Idmele Kitaya means Eliyahu passed by, Idmele Kitaya. He thought this person was an Arab when he saw him davening that way. And that's why he killed him. Now that's especially strange, what? So the Ben Yishchai says, what, Eliyahu? Eliyahu made this mistake. The Ben Yishchai says, no, Eliyahu passed by, it was Eliyahu. He saw the guy davening, he appeared to him as an Arab and killed him. Why? So the Ben Yishchai says he was Chayiv Misa. He wasn't Chayiv Misa in Bezdin, but we know that the halacha is not for Bezdin to implement, A person who disregards what Chachamim say is chayiv misa. What does that mean? That he's got a death threat hanging over his head from Hashem. You want to do something? Just one. What? Okay. So, that's a death threat hanging over his head. It puts a person into a situation where has a death threat hanging over his head. So, just one second, okay? So, he was chayiv misa. Just, it's not up to Bez and it's not up to us to do it. Eliyahu was a messenger of Shemayim. Eliyahu killed him, midin, chiyuv misa, midei Shemayim. Eliyahu carried it out. What were you going to say? Avraham Yosef is suggesting that maybe this fellow already had a big bill piling up, and this was the last straw. Possibly. Okay. Rabbi Yaakov is asking if this is just a general example of a person who's over on different Chachamim, so it doesn't show us any special severity about this per se. But the answer is that at the end of the day, in most cases of a person who's over on different Chachamim, you don't see him being zapped immediately. Right here, apparently the severity of this Divrei Chachamim was such that it warranted Eliyahu coming by immediately and taking care of it right away. But why should this be more severe? Because of the chutzpah that is showing Klapei Mala. Okay, we move on. We begin the next sugya.
Why don't we say the person who doesn't daven at all is really even worse?
Why don't we say the person who doesn't daven at all is worse? Reuven is asking if a person who doesn't daven at all is worse. A, maybe. B, maybe not. Meaning, possibly, quite possible. But on the other hand, maybe not, because to do something in a way that demonstrates. What we're saying here is that this is showing as though there are two Rishuyas. That's the way the Gemara puts it down. Like there are two deities. Might be better not to daven at all. Maybe. The best thing is to daven in shul in the right direction. Okay. Let's move on. O'Malley, what?
The Gemara says, always daven towards the base of Migdash. Wherever you are, daven
toward
the base of Mikdash. And why is it
make
it so complicated now?
Always daven toward the base of Mikdash, but
always daven toward the base of Mikdash. But if you're far away, daven toward the base of Mikdash. Not that far, daven toward the base of Mikdash. Not that far.
That's true. Rabbi Reuven is asking, aren't we told at the end of the day to daven toward the base of Mikdash?
And then somebody gets Mikdash. It's very confusing.
Well, no, first of all, you have to remember, in this case, the guy might have actually been davening away from the base of Mikdash. He was davening behind the shul. According to Tosis, he was davening toward the Beit HaMikdash. But, again, if we say that this halachi should always daven towards the Beit HaMikdash, does that mean that as long as I'm davening towards the Beit HaMikdash, nothing else matters? Meaning, can I stand on somebody's head and daven towards the Beit HaMikdash? Sure, daven towards the Beit HaMikdash, but don't stand on somebody's head. So Rashi is saying, one minute. So Rashi is saying, daven towards the Beit HaMikdash, but never with your back to a shul. Never with your back to a shul. That's what Rashi is saying. Daven towards the Beis HaMikdash, but don't do crimes while you're doing it. Davening with your back to the shul is a crime. And davening towards the Beis HaMikdash doesn't justify it. That's what we're saying. Just like davening towards the Beis HaMikdash doesn't justify standing on somebody's head while you do it. That's what the Gemara is saying here. Have to let it settle in. Let it settle in. But let's move on.
It's a very important point because here it is, the person's doing the right thing.
He's not doing the right thing. He was doing the wrong thing.
No.
This is not where a person is making a mistake. This is a sensitivity that a person should have. Not to stand with his back toward the tzibur. Now, it might not come to us naturally. But once the Chachamim are telling us this, it's a sensitivity that we should develop. We should feel that it's sacrilegious. I imagine, especially according to what the Ben Ishchai is saying, that this person knew this halacha. And he disregarded it. Not talking about a person who didn't know. I'll just note that for us it's quite possible that in earlier times this sensitivity would come more naturally. I'll give an example. I was very amazed by this. Right after the first yahrzeit of Rabbi Avigdor Miller in the shul, they unveiled a big plaque that they had put over his place in memory of him. They put over his place a big plaque in, over his place in the shul, yeah. And they had one of his oldest and one of his most notable Talmidim give a little, a short little hesped, and then to actually read the whole text of the plaque. It was a long text describing the Rav and what he had done for the shul. So it always struck me, this was a very, very fine person who had worked on his character for many years. He was standing, gave his hesped, and then he said, sitting in front of the shul, and then he said, Rabbi, I'm going to ask you to forgive me now. I'm at the point where I'm to read the plaque. I'm going to have to turn my back on you. And then he turned around and read it. It struck me. That's a sensitivity that it's a certain refined level where he felt like, I'm doing something disrespectful here, I have to apologize. Again, doesn't come to us, might not come to us naturally, but Chachamim are alerting us to it. Let's note that a lot of these halachas, the purpose of many of these halachas is to help refine and develop our sensitivities. Not just to say that, well, I don't necessarily feel this way. Oh, on the contrary, if you don't feel this way, note what Chazal are saying and realize that this is a sensitivity that should be developed. Rabbi Avraham is suggesting that if so, maybe when a person walks out of shul, he should walk out backwards so as not to turn his back on the shul. And the truth is, you actually are quoting a halacha that's in Shulchan Aruch. Again, this is not the same concept as davening with your back to the shul. This is an added level of respect for the shul. But it does say that it's a good thing to do, to walk out of a shul backwards, although we won't classify this in that same level of severity of the sacrilege of davening with your back to a shul. Okay. What, of walking out backwards? I don't know. Again, if you're not exposed to the shul, it's not a problem anyways. You're asking if there's a lot of empty area in front of the shul. I don't know. There were a few suggestions raised there that maybe it's as long as people would associate it with the shul. I don't know. Okay, let's move on. Do you have a watch I can borrow? Sorry. I just don't have my... Thanks. Okay, let's begin the next discussion. One of the sages said to Rav Bibi Bar Abaye, others say, Rav Bibi said to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, my, what's meant by a pasuk that says, Kerum Zulus Livnei Adam? This is an unrelated discussion. We're bringing it in here just because we're citing, we began before with a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Soviv Rishayim is halachu. The Rishayim circle around from the outside, from which we inferred this issue of not davening behind the shul. So the Gemara is going to go on now just to expound the continuation of that pasuk, which is a different idea. Kerum Zulus Livnei Adam. That's what the pasuk says. I'm not even going to offer a simple translation of the pasuk because it's very cryptic and it can be interpreted in many different ways, so we'll wait for the Gemara to offer its different interpretations, then we'll see it in the words. So he told him, Eilu dvarim sha'oindim birumay shaloylam ubnei adam mezalzulim b'hem. This is referring to things that stand in the greatest of places, in the highest of places, the most exalted things, but people take them lightly. So that's in the words of the pasuk. Back up to the pasuk. Kirum. Sometimes, as high as something is, kirum, as high as something is, zulus livnei adam. It's taken cheaply by people. People relate to it lightly. What does this mean? Really, this is just introducing, well, one of the most fundamental perspectives we're supposed to go through life with. When we're here in this world, we have no idea of the value of the opportunities that we're with at all times. The opportunity to do a mitzvah. The opportunity to learn Torah. The opportunity to daven. In this world, the way that Sfarim put it, we're rich. We're wealthy. You can get as much as you want of it. To realize that there are thousands of people who have already passed on to the next world. Millions, billions, billions, I don't know if billions, but millions, billions of people have already passed on, and they see us and they go out of their minds with envy. They would just be given the opportunity to come back for 2 minutes and give a dime to tzedakah what they would give for them. And we're here and we're surrounded with opportunity. Yeah, yeah, you can do it. It's easy to realize you are a very privileged minority. Most of mankind is dead. You're alive. Very small percentage of history is alive. Most of history consists of dead people. Right? And within that minority of living people, you're Jewish. So you have to realize that all the different mitzvahs that surround us, right and left, you can get them for free wherever you want. The people who are not here anymore are pining for it. That's why, for example, you walk into a cemetery, halacha is tucking your tzitzis. Why? You're mocking them by walking with your tzitzis out. Because they look at it and they're dying for the opportunity, no pun intended, to come back and be able to do that once.
They were so much older mitzvahs than they had 70, 80, 90 years of wearing tzitzis also.
A person who was Shemit Torah mitzvahs definitely has a good career of mitzvahs behind him. But yet, once a person goes, he says, oh, I should have packed my time much better. When they look at us with the opportunity, it's a certain mixture of scorn and envy. Right? Look at what these people have at their fingertips. And look at, they just don't realize it. When they reach where we reach, they will. What if you go to just the woman's cave? That's an interesting question. I don't know. But at the end of the day, even when you go to he said, what if you go to the cave of a very great person who did utilize every second of life? The answer is that it still applies. Because it's not just that he's jealous of the fact that he missed the opportunity, he could have taken more advantage, but he's jealous of the fact that you today are in a position of doing a mitzvah and he's not. Because mitzvahs are not just about schar. You have to realize that when you're on a level of Avraham Avinu, mitzvah is not just schar. Mitzvah is the opportunity to make Hashem proud, to give Hashem nachas, to know that right now you are Hashem's focus and he's excited about you. That, they can never do that again. That we have the opportunity to do. But we'll end with that. But that's what the Gemara is telling us. Kirum zulus levnei adam. Some of the things that are the greatest things, the highest of places, are taken lightly by people. Okay. That'll be all.